We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
This is Focus, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Frain is at the controls this morning. Well, this is May. May is National Bike Month, and we thought here this morning in this hour of the show we'd celebrate at least a little bit as we talk with biker and blogger Eben Weiss. He is the man behind the very popular cycling blog Bike Snob NYC. He's been doing this blog for a while. I believe he started this back in 2007. And at the time, this was anonymous. It was something that, for his observations on people and their machines, the way people ride, what they wear, the attitude they have toward their bikes, has gotten a lot of attention all over, has picked up a lot of fans, among them Lance Armstrong. Well, he has now come out, and he has a book that he is promoting. The book is titled Bike Snob, and the subtitle, Systematically and Mercilessly Realigning the World of Cycling. It's just come out recently. Chronicle Books is the publisher. He's been spending some time traveling around talking about it, and we're pleased that he could spend some time talking with us. Questions are certainly welcome. Comments as well, if you have questions about bikes or maybe you have some observations about bicycles and cyclists, you want to talk about some of your own experiences, that'd be certainly great. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, is 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. You may also send along your comments by email to will-talk@illinois.edu. And Mr. Weiss, hello.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Our guest here, in addition to continuing to do this blog, bikesnobnyc.blogspot.com. Let me also mention he's also done some racing. He's been a commuter, a bike messenger, and in addition to writing the blog, has written for a number of other publications, New York Times, Outside, Bicycling Magazine. So you can find his writing around. You can go on the web, by the way, and read the blog, as I have, and there's a lot of pretty entertaining stuff on there. Well, what was it that led you to start this blog in the first place?
I've always been a writer or interested in writing, and I've always, in one way or another, been involved in cycling. I've ridden bikes my whole life, and really loved to do that. So, about three years ago, I just started commenting on the world of cycling, because it's a rich world and a varied world, and sometimes a funny world, but it's one I have a lot of affection for. So I just sort of, on a whim, started a blog so I could make my wise guy comments, and that's how it started, and people picked up on it and enjoyed it.
Yeah, and why did you initially decide maybe you would want to? You're using a, well, I don't know what the net equivalent of pen name is, but you didn't put your name on it.
No, I didn't, because, I mean, in one respect, when I started the blog, it's not something I sat down and planned out and had a big concept for. It was just something I tried, and I didn't even know what it was going to be, so I thought it was best to keep it anonymous. And then at the same time, the one thing I did know going into it was I was going to be, you know, I was going to be sarcastic. I was going to make a lot of jokes, and it was important to me, though, because I really have affection for everything I write about. I didn't want people to think I was making fun of one person over another, or that I sort of had a preference. I wanted everybody to be able to laugh at it and identify with it. So I think it's easiest to do that when you don't know who's writing the blog. Mm. You know, you don't have a picture of this person.
And it got the blog, certainly not around New York, but not just around New York, got a lot of attention, and people were reading it. Were you surprised that it seemed to be, at least in some people's minds, a big story when you actually stood up and say, "Hi, this is me. I'm Bike Snob."
Yeah, I mean, on one level, it was a surprise to me that the blog got popular in the first place. just because, you know, again, I didn't think much going into it, so I was pleasantly surprised that so many people started reading it. So in that respect, yes, it was surprising, and it was surprising that people cared who I was when I revealed myself. At the same time, though, I think cycling is such a something that's more popular than a lot of people may realize, and I think maybe people do have an appetite to read sort of pop culture commentary on cycling, something that goes beyond like gear reviews or just bike race reporting, something that's a little more general, and so in that respect, I've sort of in retrospect, it makes sense that the blog got popular.
Well, so, you know, some people, I think, toward cycling and toward whatever it is that they ride, take a very utilitarian kind of approach.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't need to be terribly complicated. And,
no.
You know, they would say they do it because it's fun and because mm-hmm. they say it's good exercise. And
mm-hmm.
maybe they feel good about, you know, not driving a car. And,
mm-hmm.
and then there are also, you can spend a lot of money on a bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
It can be very exotic in its design and parts, and you can be really, really fanatical about that stuff. So that's sort of like the two poles. What exactly, though, is the difference between the person who has some old beat up bike and has balloon tires and has one speed and it gets them where they want to go and they're perfectly fine with that, and then the person on the other end who's just into exotic, you know, frame components and really high end things like gears and brakes and wheels and all of that, and they're just really crazy about it.
Cycling, it's like anything else. It's like food or music or anything, in that it's something a lot of us enjoy, but we all approach it differently. Some of us can't be bothered with the esoterica and the expense, and we just like the joy or the practicality of anything, whether it's cycling or eating or drinking wine or whatever. And some of us really just like to get carried away with all of that stuff. It's everybody approaches it differently. I sort of have a foot in each. You know, I really like the utilitarian aspect of cycling and the fact that it's practical, and I think it's important to have a bike that you cannot worry about and that you can lock up outside and you can just use to get around. But at the same time, you know, I do also cycle for recreation. And as soon as things start getting recreational, you start to pay attention to, oh, well, how can I make this a little better? How can I make this a little nicer? So, you know, I think we can all relate to both sides of it to some extent.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure, as you say, particularly if you live, well, I guess anywhere. I was going to say if you live in a city, but I suppose if you live anywhere, if you have a bike that's very flashy and calls attention to itself and you've spent money on it, you're always going to be worried about security. And can you, even if you think that you've got it locked up securely, can you leave it somewhere? Because they certainly have a way of disappearing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that makes bikes great is that they're you know, even the cheapest bike is light, considering how useful. It's a light machine. You can bring it inside and out. It's maneuverable and practical, but that's the same thing that makes it easy to steal. So that's the unfortunate part of it. But so I think it's important, as I say in the book, not to get too attached to the material side of cycling. To always know that you can be separated from your bike, and if you come to terms with that beforehand, you won't feel this gut-wrenching pain when you walk outside and your bike is gone.
Yeah, I've felt it. By the way, I have felt it. Our guest this morning is Eben Weiss. He writes about cycling and has written for Outside, for Bicycling Magazine. And he is also a blogger, the man behind the blog BikeSnobNYC.blogspot.com. If you just put BikeSnobNYC into your browser, you can find his blog. For a long time, he just went as BikeSnob, and now recently has come out and said, yes, this is me, Eben Weiss. He also has written a book that is out now. He might like to take a look at it. If you are interested in cycling or you know somebody who is, the title of the book is Bike Snob, Systematically and Mercilessly Realigning the world of cycling, as published by Chronicle Books. And we have a caller here. We'd welcome others. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And email will-talk@illinois.edu. Somebody on our toll free line here. Line four. Hello.
Hello, and good morning again. I'd like to bring up a less than pleasant aspect of bicycling that I've just been finding out about. I have a son who does a lot of bicycling, like you. He was a bike messenger in San Jose, and it led to a lot of interesting things in life, and it's been very good for him. He's done a lot of charity rides and stuff like that. But the groups out there have developed a little nasty habit that I've found about. I don't really care for it very much, and I've expressed it to him. And that is, a large group of cyclists will meet down on the corner of Powell and Market or someplace, and all of a sudden, there'll be several thousand bikers, and they'll take over the street and just ride along. And I don't know if it's sanctioned or anything, but it seems to me it's very rude, and they block traffic and everything. There's a name for it, and I'm sure you know it, but you understand what I'm saying?
It's critical mass is what you're talking about?
Yes, that's it, yes.
Yeah. I'm not particularly crazy about critical mass myself. I mean, certainly they have critical mass here in New York City, too, and it's recently been at the center of a lot of controversy. There was an incident where a police officer assaulted a participant, and there was a lot of controversy over that. And I'm just not crazy about any activity in which large numbers of people get together for various reasons, but trouble seems to ensue. I mean, unfortunately, critical mass has caused other kinds of trouble in New York too. And while it's supposed to be an expression of cyclists' right to share the road with cars and sort of a way of asserting that, unfortunately, what's happened in New York is it's actually resulted in the passing of laws limiting cycling. And especially in a place like New York, where cycling's always been a big part of life in New York, and there've always been lots of people riding bicycles, it doesn't seem necessary to me. It seems to cause more trouble than anything. I do understand it a little more. You hear of critical mass taking place, in smaller cities or cities where the average person is unaware of bicycles. And maybe then I can understand it, if only for people to be able to come together and show themselves. I'm a little more, I can understand it more on that level. But yeah, in San Francisco, New York City, and so forth, I think the best way to sort of advertise cycling is to just ride your bike normally and ride it well and responsibly. And I think it's just normal people going about their business that kind of brings cycling into the mainstream.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Again, other questions, comments are welcome. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455, and email will-talk@illinois.edu. Seems like this is very quickly, when you talk about cycling, you get to this issue of how do you manage to negotiate this relationship between bikes and cars when they have to share the same pavement.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that both sides here will make frequently the same complaints. And you have to admit that there's some justification on both sides, where you have cyclists saying that the drivers act like the cyclists don't have any right to be there. And the drivers say that the cyclists are riding badly and that the cyclists don't seem to understand that they're supposed to obey the same rules and that they're supposed to stop at stop signs and stop lights, and they're supposed to ride the direction that traffic is going, and on and on and on. So each side has its complaints about the other, and I guess you have to say, yeah, right. Right, well, on both sides. But what do you do about that?
Well, the first thing, I just don't know how it happened that we've gotten to this place where there's this us versus them, like cyclists versus drivers, as if people are just one thing or the other, and people have lost this ability, or maybe never had it in the first place, to see that a human being is a human being regardless of what vehicle he or she is operating at the time. And plenty of cyclists, I would wager that most cyclists are also drivers, at least sometimes, and are also pedestrians. And plenty of drivers obviously ride, too. So this notion of who's right and who's wrong and all of that, I think it's ridiculous, and I think the first, I think the most important thing is for people to kind of realize that. You know, having said that, obviously, you know, you have bad and inconsiderate drivers, and you have bad and inconsiderate cyclists. And in an ideal world, everybody would be responsible and considerate, and that's unfortunately not the case. And then the only thing that I think kind of skews, if you insist on making this cars versus bikes argument, which, as I said, I don't really buy into, but if you insist on making that, you know, the one thing that skews things a little towards cyclists, or two things rather, that skews things a little in the cyclist's favor is that, number one, in most places, you know, the streets are really not well designed for cyclists. You're at an inherent disadvantage, and secondly, you're just much more vulnerable as a cyclist than you are as a driver. You really are. So, I think as a motorist, you sort of do have to take into account, even though, unfortunately, you have cyclists who are irresponsible, you also have to take into account, you know, I can do a lot more damage. I mean, look, when I drive, I'm aware of that.
Do you think that there's much likelihood that over time that the road system is going to be retrofitted so that there actually can be a place for cyclists, or do you think in most places that's just not going to happen?
Well, I mean, I'm not a policy expert or anything, but, you know, Ray LaHood, the transportation secretary, has articulated that the government is gonna be more aware of that in the future, and that going forward transportation policy is going to take all forms of transportation into account. So theoretically that will happen. And certainly where I live in New York City, they've done a huge amount in the last few years to make the streets better for cyclists. And it's definitely made a difference. As somebody who's been riding a bike for a long time, it's just, it feels more pleasant and relaxed to ride a bike here than it used to. There's more bike lanes. There are places where there's you know, traffic signals that you know, like specific traffic lights for bicycles that are timed, you know, in relation to the lights for cars to make everything work better. And that stuff's changing. It's changing, and it's the kind of thing that's gonna work to everybody's benefit. I mean, there's no reason in 21st century America that the roads should not be optimally designed for everybody.
All right, let's talk with somebody here on a cell phone next. Line one. Hello.
Yes. Good morning. I enjoyed the discussion today. The last comment leads directly into my comment. I traveled to Australia. That's our second home. And I was recently down in Melbourne last week and walking, riding. In Australia, at least in Melbourne, these questions that you're raising have already been answered. For example, even on alleyways or on spaces where people walk between large buildings, such as New York City and on the road, they have a pedestrian with a painted person on the ground, on the concrete, asphalt, the bike, clearly labeled bike, and on the roads, bike and automobile and pedestrian. The difference is every one of those three entities, automobile driver, bicyclist and a pedestrian, all have individual rights in their own lanes. If a bicyclist hits a pedestrian in a pedestrian lane, they are 100% at fault. No questions asked. If a pedestrian goes into a bicyclist lane and gets hit, the bicyclist is not at fault at all. It's the pedestrians at fault.
Mm-hmm.
And the same with the vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
But it's simple.
Yeah,
the difference is there's no gray areas.
Mm-hmm.
Heard of
mm-hmm.
some, you know, person falling down, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And really, the bicyclists in Australia are pretty cognizant that if they do hit a pedestrian, even though they're not at fault, they're still going to explain how they hit them, but they're not at fault.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand why this is, you know, we should be able to do this in Champaign-Urbana as a model city. You simply paint the lanes, you put the denote, and anybody caught moving over into those other lanes, they are at fault. No questions asked.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the cycling is like there in your neck of the woods. I mean, maybe you or you guys could tell me a little bit. I mean, in New York, that's starting to happen, and you have a little bit more of a delineation and a little more accommodation for different forms of transportation. But I don't know what it's like there. I don't know. I don't know what it's like as a cyclist if there's bike lanes there or what it's like to be a walker there or anything.
Champaign-Urbana, campus area, it's not too bad, but not on some of the larger east-west, north-south.
Mm-hmm.
Across the bigger streets, the ring roads, you want to be a bit careful. Also in the countryside,
mm-hmm.
I see more problems outside in where we farm out in Champaign County. Bicyclists are not smart when it comes to ag equipment.
Mm-hmm.
They're rather stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Those big pieces of ag equipment we move on two-lane roads. You can't stop those on a dime.
Uh-huh.
And they're sticking out into the other lane, but so be it. That is the law. You are transporting ag equipment.
All right. Well, I don't have a lot of encounters with agricultural equipment here. So,
we do out here, and they are not smart about that kind of equipment. But in the cities, it's easily handled if we could just get administration to recognize you need to clearly identify the lanes, educate the police for the traffic force, and then ticket everybody, the pedestrian, the bicyclist, and the driver, the automobile driver. Not one or the other. If they see them in another lane, ticket them.
Mm-hmm.
But who knows when we'll get to that point.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate the comment of the caller. Yes, the one thing I would say is I know that there are people here in the local government and people at the university and the people who are interested in the whole, you know, thinking about the whole transportation infrastructure, that it is something that people really are thinking about.
Yeah.
And that they're making progress on. But I think that it may well take some time. And, you know, here, particularly around the campus area, there are a lot of places where there are transportation choke points where you have cars, buses, cyclists, pedestrians, all coming together, sometimes just going every which way. And I'm afraid that often we have pedestrians who are careless and doing things they shouldn't, cyclists who are careless and doing things they shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
We have distracted drivers sometimes doing things that they shouldn't. And that, you know, each part there, they have to be very aware of, you know, what they're doing, what's going on around them.
Sure.
You know, so it's really quite complicated. It's, you know, Champaign-Urbana is not a big place, but there are certain times when there are a lot of people who are all on the street right at the same time. I'm sure that for people who plan these sorts of things, it can create real serious challenges.
Yeah, I'm sure. And you know, in the meantime though, yeah, people do have to be aware and sometimes considerate, and you kind of have to drop the me first attitude regardless of how you're getting around. We all tend to to kind of take the me first attitude. And like you mentioned, distracted driving, and I mean you have distracted everything, cell phones and all that have just wreaked havoc. I think I see stuff every day that I can't believe people just paying absolutely no attention with their face in the BlackBerry while they're driving a car and running lights, and it's terrible.
Yeah, and I also have seen people talking on cell phones riding bikes.
Yeah, that too. I mean, ride the bike. You don't need to be on the phone.
Hang up and ride.
And walking. People walk out into the middle of the street like the cell phone is pulling them around. It's like we're following the phones. We've surrendered to our phones, and it's creating chaos out there.
We have some other callers here. We'll get to them. Let me introduce again our guest, Eben Weiss. He is a cyclist, has been a racer, a commuter, a bike messenger. He has written about cycling for New York Times, Outside Bicycling Magazine, and he is the blogger who has been known as, continues to be known as, Bike Snob NYC, his blog. Very popular with a lot of people. For a while, he was doing this anonymously, and now he's saying, yes, this is me, Eben Weiss. I'm the Bike Snob. And you can still read the blog if you just put Bike Snob NYC into your web browser, and you can find it. And also, he has written a book that he is now out and about talking about. The title of the book is Bike Snob, Systematically and Mercilessly Realigning the World of Cycling. That's the subtitle. Chronicle is the publisher. Just a real quick, this is a little different than the blog, although I'm sure you get into some of the same stuff. Who do you think this book is for?
I wrote the book. I would hope that anybody any cyclist would appreciate it. The person I had in mind when I wrote it most was maybe the person who's interested in cycling and not necessarily a lifelong cyclist, or not necessarily someone who's deeply involved in it, who maybe wants to be more involved in it, but looks at it and says, "Wow, cycling's kind of scary. All this equipment, and am I cool enough? Am I this enough? Do I need that?" I wrote it for that person most because I wanted to tell that person, no, you don't need to have an expensive bike. No, you don't need to be afraid. No, you don't need to be cool. You don't need anything. Just ride your bike and have fun. So that's who I had foremost in mind.
All right. Some other callers here. Let's talk next with someone in Urbana, line two.
Hi. I am so excited to be talking to the Bike Snob. That's awesome.
Okay.
This conversation is so apropos. Last night here in Urbana, we had a well-attended city council meeting about something called the Proposition Number 5, which is getting bike lanes right in our scenic Main Street downtown area, and it's incredibly exciting. We had all kinds of studies quoted from different cities who had put in this sort of bicycling infrastructure with great results, and I wanted to ask if you've seen this sort of, it's called like the road diet, and if you've seen this kind of infrastructure and how it changes both driver, pedestrian, and bicyclist behavior. So I'd just love to hear some comments on that. And also to say I'm really a good proponent of keeping awareness for everyone who's going to be on the road. Like, get off your phone, please.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think you gotta stay off the phone. And I think the most important thing, you know, beyond bikes and cars and everything is just being a considerate and compassionate person, and knowing that we're all sharing the outside world, and to just sort of watch out for each other a little bit. And in terms of, and it's great to hear that you guys are putting in the bike lanes and all of that. I'm not sure you mentioned a specific kind of bike lane or infrastructure, I think, which maybe I'm not sure exactly what you mean, but
the road diet. Our city staff here has done extensive research on this, and we've actually implemented it in another part of town to great success, where we have four lanes right now. Right. Maybe getting in some places five lanes in our main street.
Right,
and we're going to be squishing it down, dieting it down to three. so you got the two across from each other and then a center turning lane. And this kind of thing has been shown to reduce speeds, reduce crashes, reduce severity of crashes, and improve everybody's safety.
Yeah, I mean, that's that stuff is great. They've been doing a lot of stuff like that here in New York, and I mean, it's just it's made a tremendous difference. Certainly, I feel like it has. I mean, there are places where it used to be stressful to ride. I mean, even for someone like me, I don't mind riding in traffic. You know, I've ridden for a long time, and I'm a hardened cyclist, I guess you can say, but that doesn't represent the average cyclist, nor should it. And it really means a lot here in New York, certainly, and I'm glad it's happening elsewhere, that they're making these changes so people can get out and ride their bike and just feel comfortable. I mean, you should be aware, you should be careful, you should be all those things, but you shouldn't have to feel like you're being set upon by traffic, like you're a road hazard to people, and that you're frightened.
Right, or that you have to be like a warrior to be out there and
exactly.
I'm allowed to be here.
Yeah. You don't have to be an urban warrior. You don't have to be the guys in the fixed gear videos bombing around. You should just be able to hop on a bike and ride. And
I love the approach that you're taking with your book too. I really hope it reaches a lot of people. Another book that was very influential to me was called Divorce Your Car.
Oh, I don't know that one.
That one's really good. It's a similar approach of like, get out and just get on the bike. You don't need anything fancy.
Yeah. I think
I
think you can't say that enough. And when I started the blog, I started it to comment on sort of the minutiae of cycling and the finer points and the details. But when I decided to write the book, the thing that made me want to write the book, I remember I was riding home from work one day, and I was just thinking about how pleasant it was to ride my bike home from work, and how people should be encouraged to do this, and that's sort of what I wanted to do. So
very
cool. I'm glad you feel that way.
Well, thanks. It's been a thrill to talk to you.
I'm glad to talk to you.
Thanks for the call. Let's go over to Indiana next, line four. Hello.
It's Indiana.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a couple things. One, I hope you can make some comment about. By the way, I'll add an iPod to earbuds, or buds, depending on what part of the country you're from, for bicyclists to be driving around having their music or whatever they're listening to pretty loud and losing track of traffic sounds, which are pretty important.
Mm-hmm.
I've discovered the hard way that the big box stores' quality control on making bikes is not what it should be.
No.
Quickly, a grandfather type is... Running a bicycle repair shop, which had been in the family about 75 years, and they sold Swins, particularly. And I decided to get a BMX because the town is putting in places where it would make sense to do that if you want to run around with some of the young kids, doing things. And I went to Walmart, other places, and found a good deal at Walmart. It was a double shock mongoose, and I was very happy with it. As I come down a hill, I've been down a zillion times ever since I was a little kid, I decided to set a world record for going around the curve. Well, unfortunately, I had changed my line, and that line passed through a no parking zone, but there was a car there. So I hit it and had a good crash and everything. After he fixed the bicycle, he told me that Hoover put it together at Walmart, presumably, didn't put the wiring in correctly at all. A lot of it was tucked here, curved here. And he says, so when you pulled, he says, you were basically just stretching the wire somewhat. So I didn't have any braking power at all. And he also told me that when he purchases parts for a mongoose, it's different from the parts that Walmart would have for assembling the bike. He sort of intimated it was a different quality, and I didn't know if that were true or not. The bike's done very well for me, except for the accident of being put together incorrectly with the cables around from the brake handles and stuff like that. Other than that, I'm happy to be out on the road again. I got back to that exhilaration I had when I was an early teenager when I had my first 10-speed. And so I'm back out there again. But I just wanted to mention that to people who are a little more, say, savvy about looking their bike over. Because if it's put together by somebody you know anything about, you may be putting yourself into some danger.
Thanks. No, that's definitely true. I mean, I've seen that firsthand that if you go into a Walmart or a place like that, that the assembly of the bikes is not what it would be in a bike shop where the staff is better aware of how bicycles work. I mean, you know, there's certainly differences in equipment, but definitely the by far the most important thing on the bike is how well it's assembled. And I mean, I think they tend to just kind of take the bike out of the box and do the minimal assembly and put it on the shelf, and that's definitely not adequate. I mean, I was riding, I wrote about a bike. I actually bought a bike from Walmart and wrote about it on my blog because I wanted to look at just that. Like, what are you getting when you get a bike out of the box at Walmart? And the way the bike came out of the box, it was very poorly assembled from the factory. I mean, it was, I would call it borderline unrideable, and you know, that's as you find out the hard way sometimes, you know, that can be dangerous.
Yeah.
So I think with that stuff, like, it's two things. Number one, if you can you patronize the bike shop over the big box store or whatever you call it, but you know, on the other hand, not everybody has the luxury of having a local bike shop. So I think, you know, the bicycle being one of the best things about the bicycle is that it's a relatively simple machine, and it doesn't take a lot of know-how. You know, just do the minimal kind of learn a little bit about it, learn enough about it to go over the bike and identify problems so that so you can, you know, so you can stay safe. I mean, I see people riding around on bikes with the brakes unhooked all the time. I can only imagine because they don't know how to connect the brake, which everybody should know how to do. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I've seen that. I've seen that a lot.
I think there are probably a couple of other good reasons if you do have a locally owned and operated shop you can go to is that, and you're thinking about buying a bicycle, you can go in and you can tell them how you're going to ride, where you're going to ride, how much you're going to ride, and so they can suggest a particular kind of bike, and
absolutely,
then they can make sure that it fits you,
absolutely,
and that it is that it's the proper size, and that things like where the seat is set and where the handlebars are set are comfortable, so that then it'll feel good to you when you ride it.
Absolutely, they're going to try to make you safe and happy and comfortable and all of those things. Yeah, absolutely.
We have about 10 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Evan Weiss is our guest. He is the blogger behind bikesnobnyc.blogspot.com. This is a very popular biking blog that he did for a while just as Bikesnob, not revealing his identity, recently has done that, and he has a book out now that's titled Bikesnob, and it's published by Chronicle Books. So if you like cycling or you know someone who does, you might want to take a look at it. He's also, his writing has appeared in other publications, New York Times, Outside Bicycling Magazine, and again, his blog is there if you have internet access. What I did was just put Bikesnob NYC into your browser, and you will find it. And questions are welcome, too. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And we will continue, and we'll talk with someone in Atlanta, Illinois. Line 3, right here. Hello.
Great conversation. As a long-time person interested in biking, I want to thank everybody that's, including yourself, Evan, that are promoting bicycling around the country. I mean, it's a tremendous thing to promote, and I'll kind of give you a reason and an observation that I made that you might like to comment on. 20 or 30 years ago, pictures of China and Beijing, you saw, you know, the thousands of people going to work and shopping and everything on their bicycles. And actually, I used to be jealous of that because being a biker, I always felt that was kind of a utopia thing, that everybody used a bike to get around. And now you see a picture of Beijing. Health has deteriorated, traffic jams everywhere, and obviously the pollution caused by the automobile and everything. And that's why I'm so thankful there are people like yourself that are trying to turn this thing around in our country so that maybe we can be a little more utopian in that way, too, and I'll listen to your comments.
I think it's great that that more and more people seem to be getting turned on to the bike, and it's I think the one thing people don't realize is not everybody is there's always going to be people who aren't going to ride a bike who just are not comfortable with it, but I think at the same time there are a lot of people who are just one bike ride away from realizing, wow, this is just really pleasant and really practical, and it maybe doesn't occur to them that, right, it's actually easier to ride your bike for a lot of things, especially in a city. I mean, it just can take so much headache away, and so. More and more people are realizing that, and I think it's a great thing, and I think that so it's easy to forget that transporting yourself it's not all about status, it's not all about having a fancy car and all of that. I mean, cars are great and we need them, but at the same time, there's also this element of using the right tool for the job, and a car is not always that tool. I mean, sometimes the bicycle is the best tool.
Okay. Well, again, I want to thank the caller and go on to somebody else, and that would be a caller here in Champaign County, line one. Hello.
Hi. I'm kind of jonesing for my bike. It's on the back of my friend's car. We were doing some recreational biking down in the St. Louis area, and Forest Park is wonderful to bike in, and Tower Grove Park. It doesn't look very friendly. I guess I'm doing a report back to commuting that much, though I guess in some areas it might be okay. It is worthy to note that they have a river recreational area that starts at Laclede Landing and down on the riverfront, and you can go cross into Illinois off the Trina Rocks Bridge. You can go up the Missouri on the 150-mile-long KD Trail. It's looks quite nice. I haven't ventured Chicago biking, but there are a lot of people doing it, and it looks fairly okay. About Urbana and the bike paths, it just distresses me that we are putting this money into a ring road and a connector. It passed unanimously. I was really pretty surprised that happened, whereas there had been some investigation of a tram system, which would be intermodal and would be allow bikes to get on zero lifting kind of thing, and good for elderly people too. But they do have that in St. Louis, where you can, at off-peak hours, I think you can take a bus on a bike onto their light rail system there. So it just seems to me that this is, as well as being, you know, just casual about it, that it's a great thing to do, it's also important to get off petroleum, to get off the reliance on the car culture. I think it's much more important than I'd like you to acknowledge that in some way as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's... I think it's important too, but it's important also. It's funny. The reason I ride a bike is I love that it's clean and all of that stuff. I think my favorite thing about it is it's practical and it's fun at the same time. And that you can, like you said, you can do a totally recreational ride. You can go to a bike path somewhere. You can just go to a nice area and ride purely for pleasure. You can ride purely for exercise, or you can do it totally practically. You can use it to go to the store, you could use it to go to work, and unlike many other recreational activities, you don't necessarily have to carve out a whole day to do it or go somewhere to do it. You can integrate the bike into your everyday life. You can use it. You can enjoy your ride to work. You know, you can get a little recreation in on your commute. All of that stuff is great. And I would ride no matter what for that reason, just because it's enjoyable. But you know, at the same time, it happens to be clean, and it happens to be all of those things too, and it happens to be good for you physically, and it's kind of a win-win thing. And in terms of like the public transportation and being able to take a bike on, that's a really nice thing. I mean, here in New York, you can sort of do that on trains. You can bring the bikes on, but they're not really well equipped for that. You have some places, you have like Portland, Oregon, everyone's favorite bike place. You can bring the bike on to the, not only bring it onto the light rail, but you have a hook for it and you have space for it. And all of that stuff is great. And I think anything that a bike's so integratable as it is, it's so easy to transport and it's relatively small. I think anything that makes that easier is great.
All right. Well, I thank the caller. I have a couple of minutes here, and I have somebody else in. I want to go to here in Buckley, line 2. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
I was wondering what kind of tips that you would have for somebody that's in their 50s and starting to ride again after 35 years. I'll listen off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Well, you have some thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, my first tip is I think you said it great that. To go to the bike shop and to get a little advice and tell them just that, because hopefully if you have a good bike shop in the neighborhood or in the area and they could recommend a bike. And then once you have the bike, though, I would just get the bike that you feel comfortable on and that feels good to you, and then just ride it. It's not the best advice, I guess. But get the bike, ride it around your neighborhood, and just see what feels good and see what you enjoy. You never know where it's going to take you. You might find, oh, it's nice to, this one errand I used to do every day in the car, like, oh, that store is not too far. I'll just ride my bike there instead. And you might find you enjoy that component of it. Or you might find that you enjoy the fitness component and you want to take longer rides. And I think it's a disappointingly simple answer, but just get the bike, get any bike, and just ride it in whatever way feels good to you.
You know, one of the things that I'm interested in your thoughts on, when you look at the earliest bicycles and compare them to what we have now, other than the fact that now we have things like pedals and brakes and gears, and the bike frames can sometimes be made of these very exotic things, that actually over its history, the bicycle hasn't really changed very much, not in the essential idea that you got two wheels and they're in line and you kind of straddle the frame and you got some things that you hold on to steer. And that's basically, it's basically the same deal. Having said that, though, now is there anything in terms of recent developments in bike technology that actually you think is something that's really, really great?
Well, I mean, from a purely practical standpoint, from just being able to sit on the bike and ride it, no, just as you say, not a lot has changed. The bike is really simple, and most of what makes you comfortable on a bike is the position of the bike and the shape of the saddle and the height of the handlebars and where they are in relation to each other and the position they put you on the bike. No, I don't think I don't think there's a tremendous advance that's been made recently in terms of that. A few different gear ratios and it's all pretty much. Once they had decent brakes and the wheels were the same size and you didn't have a penny farthing kind of setup with the big front wheel and no chain drive. No, it's been pretty simple. I think what you see now tend to be refinements, and there's certainly lots of things you can spend your money on. But no, most of the ride of a bicycle is in the the width of the tires and how much air you put in them, and again your position on top of it, and that's pretty much it. It's pretty simple.
Well, I suppose like anything, it's one of those things that you can spend as much money as you want. I'm here looking at your blog, for example, and here's a thing about a bike. It's a Cannondale bike. It's a limited edition bicycle, so they're only going to make 250 of them, and they're selling them for $6,500. That is $6,500. And you wonder, what exactly makes that worth $6,500?
Nothing. You're paid for somebody to figure out. If you look at the bike, they've figured out how to remove certain frame tubes so that it looks kind of futuristic, and that's it. You've just paid for somebody to do a giant workaround of a design that already worked really well. You're paying for a look, and that's it. There's a lot of marketing. There's a lot of people wanting to sell stuff, and they need to compete with each other, and they need to find little hooks to get you to want to buy. But a bike like that, it not only doesn't really offer anything extra, but it's actually taking things away from you that a cheaper bicycle might offer. Like that's supposed to be a city bike, but in making it look all futuristic, there's not really a place to put a rack if you want to carry something. There's not really a place to mount the fender if you want to keep your butt dry. There's a lot of silly stuff like that.
Well, we're going to have to stop. If you'd like to read more on this subject of bicycles, you can look for Eben Weiss's book, Bike Snob, which is now out from Chronicle. And also, he continues to blog as Bike Snob NYC. Just put that into your browser and you can find his blog. And Eben, thanks very much for talking with us today.
Okay, thank you very much for having me. It was good to talk to you.